Welcome y bienvenidos to the Latin History X podcast, your go-to podcast for Latinx history, hosted by Lisa Rocha and Raquel Garcia.
Hey, Lisa.
Hi, Raquel. I'm ready to get this Cinco de Mayo party started.
Right? Me too. At this point, like, y'all, it's 1 o'clock in the morning. We need like five margaritas.
Yeah, for real. Exactly. And I don't drink, but I'm down.
Oh no.
I need something.
This stay at home thing, I've been drinking like every day.
Oh
my god. All right. Well, welcome back everybody. Welcome back, Lisa. It's been a second since we've done this.
Yeah.
Last time, yeah, we did it was for Mario Bausa, but we are back. And we are back with a big bang, I guess, yeah. Right? With Cinco de Mayo. So
I think it's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Lisa, I have a question for you. Well, first of all, how are you?
I am blessed. Thank you. I am so blessed.
Very good. I'm glad to hear that. I have another question for you. Did you know that Cinco de Mayo is directly connected to the Civil War?
No. I'm as pocha as they come. So I actually did not know that it had anything to do with the Civil War. The only thing I know, this holiday was celebrated more in California than Mexico. But that's pretty much where it ends. And that it blew up in the 80s, you know, due to Super Bowl. And that's pretty much about it. Until we started doing this podcast.
Yeah. So there's this interesting fact that we're going to get into a little bit later. But U.S. marketing didn't actually pick it up until the 40s and then progressively got like bigger and bigger and bigger. Super commercialized. Yeah. In the 80s and into the 90s. But I knew that we celebrated it more than Mexico did, but it wasn't until I started researching that I knew how commercialized it had become in the States, right?
Yeah.
As the 40s. But there's a lot more to it than some people may think, like its origins and how and why the battle even took place.
Right. Well, let's get into it.
All right. So Cinco de Mayo was fought during the Second French Intervention, Napoleon III's attempt to expand the French Empire. FYI, Napoleon III was Napoleon Bonaparte's nephew. And if you know anything about Napoleon Bonaparte, he was crazy and he wanted to take over the world. So he basically took after his uncle. So the intervention was initially a three-country invasion involving England and Spain as well. The initial purpose of the intervention was an attempt to collect debt owed by Mexico. But President Benito Juarez halted all international debt payments for 2 years after the reform wars that had caused Mexico to fall into bankruptcy. So Mexico in and of itself had civil wars happening for like decades, I think, at that point. So it had completely run out of money. And he's just like, well, we ain't sending you shit.
Right.
England and Spain had no intention of entering into any wars with Mexico. They just wanted their money back. So they settled their debts issues peacefully and withdrew their forces after they kind of caught on to what Napoleon was up to. And a big part of why Napoleon was like, hey, let's go invade them, was so they weren't interfering and trying to stop him from invading them. So it was kind of like, hey, he owes us money. Let's go get it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So
he had a whole different agenda.
Exactly. And then just a quick note, Napoleon was in complete violation of the Monroe Doctrine, which was a U.S. policy indicating that no European country could establish colonies in the Americas, which he was trying to do. And Lincoln was very much aware, the U.S. government was very much aware of what the situation was, but they could do very little at the time because of the Civil War happening in the States.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. I see that the battle was definitely fought between the French general, Charles de Lorenzo. Uh-huh. Is that how you say his last name?
I think so, yeah.
And Mexican general, Commander Ignacio Zaragoza. The battle took place on the infamous May 5th, 1862. That's why it's Cinco de Mayo. where Zaragoza's small military force triumphed over the much larger and powerful French forces, pushing them east to Veracruz. And it took the French an entire year to make another attempt of taking the city again. And
we're successful. Exactly. They were successful that second time. And that's how the French kind of took over. So the wait proved to hurt France's ability to assist the Confederate army, which was Napoleon's intention. His plan was to give the Confederates guns in exchange for cotton, a commodity in short supply in Europe due to the Union enforced blockade of Confederate exports. Experts also mentioned that even if the French figured out how to supply the Confederates during 1863, they would have made little difference because the Union victories had changed the trajectory of the war in favor of the Union at that point. So I think Gettysburg was about to happen at that point. And there were other, I forgot what battle exactly, but there was another battle before that that affected what was happening. So it was changing the way the war was going in favor of the Union. And it also kind of going back to what you mentioned previously, the U.S. celebrations of the battle. In the later half of 1862, news spread to mining towns in Northern California where celebrations took place. And they actually, like,
didn't they like fire off like guns and like fireworks?
Yeah. It was a big to do up there. And I did read in an article, basically what they what happened was is that because so as we most of us know at this point, Cinco de Mayo is not the celebration of the independence of Mexico. In fact, that's in September.
Right. I always get that. I mean, the story's confused, not the day's confused, right?
Yeah. Right. And so it took me a really long time. I mean, my family's from Guatemala. I know a little bit of that history, but it's not like I had no idea, like, honestly, until like the whole identity, like, ooh, let me find out who I was, where I came from. Like, let me find out everything about what it is, you know, like Latinidad and being Latinx. And
it's
anyway.
Celebrated.
Yeah.
In Guatemala.
Like, right. Yeah. Right. And so, what was I saying? Oh, yeah. So basically, because of that and how in Mexico they abolished slavery, the idea was that Mexicans and Mexican Americans that were already in California and in the Western states were their political views were aligned with the Union. So they supported the Union. And so because of that battle, because they knew what France was trying to do by colonizing Mexico again, they were, you know, celebrating the fact that Zaragoza defeated you know, Lorences.
Right. And because it changed their whole life.
Right. And again. Then Zaragoza was thought of as being, you know, like a war hero. So he was celebrated as well. There was a couple articles that mentioned that, which I found really interesting. But with that being said, in California itself, the tradition would continue every year until this year. And due to, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic, I don't believe there's any, I mean, I'm in Nevada now, but I don't believe they're like following through with any like outdoor celebrations for it.
I highly doubt
it. I mean, I don't believe there's going to be any celebrations out here either, like not even a little, like small ones. So, you know, up until this point, it had been celebrated in California for the last 157 years.
Well, the more that I was doing research on it, I was realizing how big that it's a holiday celebrated here in California or the States compared to Mexico.
Right.
And like over 120 official celebrations in the U.S. and over, you know, across, you know, 21 different states. I mean, look at Fiesta Padre that happens here in L.A. I had no idea. This is literally the largest Cinco de Mayo celebration in the world, like attracting over 500,000 people every year. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and that's in our backyard. Well, in my backyard. But definitely.
It used to be my backyard.
Yeah. Well, it can still be your backyard.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just a hop, skip, and a jump away.
Yeah. But I thought it was kind of cool. You know, we always hear about Cinco de Mayo, and it's always, the watered down version of like, oh, it's, you know, tequila and margaritas mm-hmm. and, you know what I mean? Mariachi, right. And where's your mariachi, you know, sombrero kind of thing.
Right.
But the reality is there's really a lot of history here.
Right.
And it's just kind of interesting to me that the U.S. celebrates it more than Mexico. So with that said, it's definitely something that, you know, I think the city was really pushing to constantly celebrate, which was nice. But now, like you said, with everything going on,
right.
Who knows, you know, how that's going to change. Once the Civil War was over, the U.S. was able to put pressure on the French to pull its military forces from Mexico, but not before Emperor Maximilian, with the intent of forming stronger political and military ties, agreed to establish communities for Confederate politicians and the military. Confederate Secret Service officer Matthew Fontaine Maury was commissioned to develop the communities in and around Cordoba, Mexico. However, only one community was complete, the largest of them named Carlota Colony. Not long after the French withdrew its military force from Mexico, Confederates were pushed back to the United States. Later after this happened, the first and only emperor of the Second Mexican Empire, Maximilian, was captured and executed. He's an interesting character and worth looking more into. The Smithsonian Channel has a documentary on his life and has a rose-tinted view of Mexico and France's influence on the land. Which I, the more like we did the research on this, I found myself curious about what France's influence has been on our Mexican culture.
Speaking of that, you were telling me it's like two, you know, traditional staples of Mexico that I was really surprised to hear about. So, I mean.
So, you know, doing all this research, I came to find that the French really influenced a lot of Mexico's cultural, Mexican culture, period, just by being the second largest European group in Mexico next to Spaniards. So I thought that was really interesting. But according to Wikipedia, the French introduced a lot of cultural traits now adopted over the years within our Mexican culture and may have coined the term mariachi, though it's not certain, so don't take my word for it, but that's, you know, according to Wikipedia. And that's a whole other podcast. But the word mariachi may have originated during the French Napoleonic rule in the 1860s, since the French settler families used the music during weddings. And I guess the way that they say it, you know, marriage or phonetic, it's a phonetic coincidence. So they also contributed with the bolillo, which I now eat with my torta. If it wasn't for the French, my torta, who knows what my torta would look like. And heavenly influenced pan dulce. So it's like, wait, the French are the reason for my concha? Like, what the?
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I was tripping.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because, I mean, I can't think of any, like, actual, like, pastries. Like, when I think of, well, actually, no. Like, there's this one pastry. I don't know what the heck it's called, but it has, like, the raspberry filling, but it's that spiral, and it has the coconut on the outside with the...
Oh,
do you know
right.
what I mean? So, I was see, like, something like that is what I think of. Like, when you said that, that's the immediate image that I had in my head. I'm like, oh, wait. But I have no idea, right. like, if that's what, you know, that also was influenced by that. But I wouldn't be surprised. But you know what's interesting is that you guys call it bolillos and we call it birote. So can you imagine? Oh, like Guatemalans. Guatemalans. I mean, at least I grew up knowing that what a bolillo. I mean, I knew the term bolillo, but I remember my dad and my mom just calling it a birote. Like, oh, make sure you get birotes when you go to the panaderia. You know what I mean? But
right.
when it was like the Mexican stores, it was like bolillo. So I was like, huh?
Right.
But it's like the same, well, like you change it up everything. Like, you know, some places say cercha and some places say gancho. You know what I mean? And like,
so
it's different, but it's interesting how like, that influenced the way that that particular bread is said, but it's pronounced differently or said differently elsewhere.
I'm sure it just goes with, I'm sure it goes along with, you know, slang, right? So it's just, you know, it's just the way that people, you know, their communication changes. But those ones that you're talking about, they are called the red ones, right? With the raspberry and the coconut. Ojos de buey, ox eye is what I'm seeing here. I don't know why, so that would be a whole other podcast, but it makes sense that, you know,
just do a whole bandulce podcast.
I would definitely need to do that.
You know what I feel like we would have to do that, like, but we'd have to do we'd have to do it when I'm in LA, when this whole thing is over, so we can go to like different panaderias and like taste everything. And it's gonna have to be like a YouTube episode in addition to the podcast.
For sure. Well, it's definitely something that, you know, it's a big tradition that was created in the New World because of the mixture, right, of the Spaniards and now understanding the French influence, really, these bakers and how they incorporated indigenous ingredients and created new recipes. And the French intervention into Mexico brought this influence of this French pastry making and now introduced, you know, as pan dulce. And what a creative way, you know, of both cultures to come together and create this sweet bread, right? And who would have thought, talking about Cinco de Mayo, talking about the French influence, talking about, like, you know, what life could have been, and actually how it did change a lot of, you know, not even, you know, just introduced into our culture.
Right.
There's a lot of French Mexicans. I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah, that's a trip.
But yeah,
it's interesting. I knew of a French Salvadorian, which is interesting.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. His mom was from El Salvador and his dad was French.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know,
but anyway,
this French empire just keeps spilling over. It's spilling over into my conchas. It's spilling over into mariachi music. It's like these homeboys came in with some major plan and, you know, try to take over Mexico, and in such a time where, you know, these, you know, everything was happening and really, you know, affected Mexican culture. But, you know, this is why I love our talks, because it starts one in one place and we end up in some other rabbit hole.
Yeah, it, like, initially this whole episode was supposed to be on, like, freaking Chile Rellenos and how they originated in Puebla, and then it was like, oh wait, Cinco de Mayo's coming, oh wait, let's look into this, oh shit, there was a connection to the Civil War, oh my god, like, what the and it just spiraled. So I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of information that comes in this time period. Mexico was going through so much at the time, so was the United States. These were new developing countries at the time, so it's, you know, there's bound to be like a million things going on. We pulled some of the most interesting things that we, or things that we found most interesting to share with you guys. And, you know, this definitely is an opportunity for everybody else. Like, if you heard a name or if you heard a thing or a place to definitely look into further that you might have found, you know, like, interest in. Like, I know we didn't talk enough about Benito Juarez, and he did a lot for Mexico. And we didn't talk nearly enough about, you know, these communities that they were trying to develop.
Right.
And just, like, really quickly, just want to say that we don't want to just focus on those, because we are, both Lisa and I, like we were talking about it earlier, are aware that there were plenty of Confederate communities that sprung up right along the border of New Mexico and Texas. And, you know, we didn't get to talk about the Juaristas, and then how there were, oh my goodness, I don't have my notes right in front of me, but it was, I think it was like Juntas Patrióticas, or like patriotic meetings and stuff that they formed in California and Nevada, which I found really interesting, because I'm like, there's hardly any history here that I've been able to find, like actual written history. I know it's there, it's just trying to actually dig for it. But it was connected to the miners, and mind you, the people who were celebrating were actually gold miners in Northern California during the gold rush. So there's so much going on.
Yeah.
And it's like little bits and pieces that we were able to pull, but just, you know, dropping a little bit more in there. So if you're just like, whoa, it piques your interest. And just FYI, I don't know, Lisa, if you remember when we were talking about the first and only woman hung in California was a Mexican woman, was during the gold rush. So it's like these men in some capacity are connected to her. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, it's just, I know. It's just, it just keeps going.
That's so interesting.
And then here we go. Like, and you know, you fall into a rabbit hole and you're like, oh my God, there's this connection and that connection. Oh my God, here. And then at the end of the day, it's like 4 o'clock in the morning. You're like, shit, I'm only going to get like 3 hours of sleep.
Right. Learning about this French Mexican war. I mean, you know, to wrap it up, it's like,
thank you. Cause I'm going to keep going.
During 1861 to 1867. So it was a good 6 year period of, you know, outnumbered Mexican army defeating a powerful invading French force at Puebla. And this retreat of these French troops at the Battle of Puebla represented a great moral victory for the Mexican people and turning into what we now symbolize as a Cinco de Mayo. It was a huge, huge, powerful, a statement of, you know, gaining back their sovereignty, right, from a foreign nation. And like you mentioned, Benito Juarez and Napoleon III, Benito Juarez became a president of Mexico and at a time when the country was in financial ruin. So he was forced to default on his debts to this European government in response to France, Britain, and Spain. And that sent these naval forces to Veracruz to demand reimbursement, like to wrap it up, you know? Mm-hmm. And at the end of it, Britain and Spain negotiated with Mexico and withdrew, but France, ruled by Napoleon, decided to use this opportunity to carve a dependent empire out of the Mexican territory. And it was then in the late 1861 when a well-armed French fleet stormed Veracruz, landing a large French force and driving President Juarez and his government into retreat. So certainly the French, they thought, you know, this is going to be a swift victory in Mexico. About 6,000 French troops under General Charles de Lorenzes set out in May. Set out in May on Cinco de Mayo in 1862 to attack Puebla de Los Angeles. And from his new headquarters in the north, Juarez rounded up a ragtag force of loyal men and sent them to Puebla. And it was because of Zaragoza's defeat against these French invaders, an estimated 2,000 to 5,000 Mexicans fortified the town and prepared for assault, and they were well equipped and they were able to beat this French force. And so that's how the 5th of May, or like I said, well known as Cinco de Mayo, came to be, and they were able to gather their army and attack, and the battle was done. You know, from daybreak to the evening is what I've been learning, that it was like a whole day. Can you imagine fighting all day?
No.
No, I can't. You know what I mean? Losing, you know, with, you know, watching, you know, the French lose tons of troops, more than Mexicans, and that's what ended it all. It was the French said, wow, we got to get out. You know what I mean? We got to go.
Right.
We're getting defeated. These Mexicans are kicking our ass. Like, it's time. You know what I mean? Call it quits.
Yeah.
So, you know, to sum it up, these are things that, you know, at the end of the day, I feel like it's part of our experience. It's part of our culture. It's definitely something to be remembered and celebrated, and to understand that Mexico could have had a whole different type of history had this not taken place.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's why it's celebrated every year. And it's the anniversary of the Battle of Puebla and known as Cinco de Mayo, and a huge, huge holiday in the state of Puebla.
Yep. And that's about it, folks.
So we hope you enjoyed this Cinco de Mayo, pan dulce, mariachi, bolillo, French, Mexican experience.
Yes. And now you made me hungry because I want a concha, now I want a torta, now I'm gonna go to sleep.
Right. I'm dreaming of bolillos, or what did you call them?
Birotes.
or birotes. Yeah, I'm down with either one.
Yeah. Girl. For sure. All right, girl. Well, anyway, we hope you guys come back for our next episode, which is supposed to be coming out in 2 weeks. We're working really hard to make this happen for you guys. And yeah, so we hope you enjoyed this one. And we'll talk to you guys soon. Thanks, Lisa.
All right. Take care. Have a good night.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you'd like to follow us on social media for additional content, you can find us at Latin History X on all platforms, or shoot us an email at contact.latinhistoryx@gmail.com. If you like this episode, we ask that you subscribe and rate us. Thank you again, and we hope to have you guys back for more Latin History X.